Well, hi, everybody, and welcome. I hope you guys are all doing great. Any comments, questions, or follow-ups from our last seminar, or any progress notes on your book, or any clarifications about anything we've talked about, anything that might be helpful for us to chat about just for a very brief time before we start our seminar? Anybody want to offer how you're finding this seminar in terms of any usefulness for you, for your writing and what you're doing? Any major takeaways that have been aha moments or ideas?
This is Kelly from Colorado.
Welcome. Hey, thanks.
The biggest thing for me, it got me started. So I think they always say start where you are, and so I've done that, and I do something on it every day.
That's great. That's a really excellent way to start, you know, to create a system and to do something and to generate a momentum. And the idea that you have to wait for inspiration probably won't work because getting at a system, creating a system so that you can then, within that system of sitting down for a specific amount of time or a specific time regularly, then you can work on getting in state to write. And that's what we're going to talk about in this seminar, in part at least, is the neuroscience of writing and getting in a state of mind to be creative and how to systematically go about that and some things to think about. So that's a good start. Congratulations. Any other thoughts or progress notes or questions from anyone?
This is Stephanie. I have a question.
Yeah, hey, thanks. Go ahead.
Hi, Mick. I just wanted some clarification on the book outline itself. In the last session, you talked about creating abstracts for each chapter. Is that itself the book outline, or is the book outline that plus the introduction and the table of contents? Just what is included in the book outline?
Okay, the book outline is everything that you see in the outline that I sent you. I think there are 9 different parts. The chapter abstracts are a component of the book outline. They're a very central part, a crucial part of the book outline, because that gives you an idea of exactly what you're going to put in each chapter and how that's going to fit together to tell the story of your book. So that's a very important aspect for your organization and your work in preparation for the book. Remember, I mentioned that by the time you've really done the chapter summaries, you've probably done a great deal to really launch the process, and then it's just a matter of fulfilling that promise and the outline you've made in doing that, because the outline cues your radar for all the things that are going to be included in your book, for all the things you want to read, the studies you want to look at, maybe the interviews you want to do, the stories that you hear, how you engage with people, the questions you ask. So that outline is going to cue your radar for the scope of what your book is about. And it's a major part of the initial effort and the organization and overview of the book. So that's really for you. And that's going to be a very, very important part of what you do. By the time you've done the outline, you've already moved into a serious initial phase of writing. And you know, it's something you can do later, but I think to do it before you do the book will give you a better idea of how to code your radar for the things you want to look at and learn about and the things you want to include in your book, and already beginning to think about how you want to present that in a story form to develop it and develop the themes of it to present it to your readers. So good question. Does that make sense now for your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay.
That clarification.
Yeah, and I would say look at least one of those two books that I referenced for the book proposal. Whether or not you do a traditional agent and traditional publishing house, they're going to be helpful because they're samples in both of those about what successful book proposals outlines look like. And we're going to talk in next seminar in the business of writing, the 8 or 9 different paths that you can follow to publish. One of those is a traditional agent and a traditional publishing house, but there are a number of others, and we'll talk about how you can fit your objective and your book with what you want to do and how you pursue that in terms of publishing. So any other thoughts or questions or things to discuss briefly? Well, we'll move into our discussion, and I'll reserve some time at the end for any clarifications or questions. Okay, we're going to talk about the science of writing. Let's look first at your comfort zone. To write and publish your first book, you'll have to leave your comfort zone. A comfort zone is simply a familiar pattern of behavior. It's a gradual process initially, but once established, resist change, because that's the job definition of your brain, to create a default mode, to hardwire things you do in a repeated way, and then to repeat them and resist change, because that's the job description, to preserve energy and to do things by the default mode so you don't have to think about it. So think of a comfort zone like your home thermostat. An increase or decrease in room temperature immediately signals an adjustment to return to the set point, the comfort zone. Now, our minds and our brains both contribute to maintenance of our comfort zone. We return to the familiar even when we don't like it or when it's uncomfortable or when it's limiting. We return to that comfort zone because it's predictable and it's automatic. There's always the pull of the old and the discomfort of the new. A comfort zone can be a repeated role you play in a relationship or a repeated pattern, like procrastinating about making needed lifestyle changes. Any of the patterns that we engage in, from emotional to thought to behavior to attachment patterns, these all become hardwired and become part of our automatic system. Remember, we talked about 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. And that means that we're operating in a way that becomes more automatic. And that's part of what we do as coaches, is to look at the patterns that work and the ones that don't work, to help someone do more of what works and help them revise the storylines they're creating that may not work. So it can take various forms. For example, bargaining with yourself about seriously writing or really completing your book within a specific time frame. In the beginning, a departure from a comfort zone feels, by definition, uncomfortable. It's a rupture of continuity. A routine is broken. And remember that a habit is not a definition. It's a choice that gets repeated. If someone characterizes a series of repeated patterns, such as procrastination, it can become a part of an identity. Well, I'm just a procrastinator. As if that's an explanation, then it makes it harder to change. But every aspect of that is the choice architecture that we look at in coaching. When we write a new story, we change our minds and we change our brains. And think about your performance. Even the money you make operates in a similar way. If people get more successful, they feel vaguely uncomfortable, just different. If you make more money than fits with your self-image, it cues an internal thermostat to return to the comfort zone. Here's an example of a comfort zone in action. Most lottery winners manage to give or spend their newfound earnings to return to their previous set zone. In the United States, just over 80% of lottery winners of $3 million or over file bankruptcy within the first 5 years of their wins. Their money changed, but their mindset didn't. So a comfort zone is an unconscious thermostat until it becomes conscious. Then you can reprogram your mind and brain. Your mind can reframe, your brain can rewire. So one possibility, as we've already heard, make a habit of writing, construct a schedule, and be loyal to that schedule. Now, let's look first at framing something. This is something that we do in coaches. It's one of our tools as coaches. For example, your brain can't tell the difference between anxiety and excitement. It activates in exactly the same way. So how you frame it determines how you're going to proceed. If you frame it as excitement, as opportunity, as challenge, then you're looking for ways to engage it and incorporate it. If you frame it as anxiety, then the idea is to avoid it. Danger, better head for cover, and you get into defensive mode. So how you frame it immediately determines which way you go. And think about how you, one of the people I regularly follow, Dr. George Lakoff, one of social psychologists, one of his most recent books tells everything in the title, Don't Think of an Elephant. So that frames what you think about. Whether negative or positive, it sets a framework. Meaning derives from the frame we place around an event or situation. The structure of meaning is our inside job. It, for example, if a traumatized combat veteran hears a car backfires, that stimulus immediately ignites the kindling in his amygdala that produces a startle response, which then instantly transports him to a different state of mind. To his companion, alongside with a different history, it's background noise that doesn't even interrupt the conversation. Each meaning and each frame is yours to construct. And remember, it's not there until you create it. Whatever you think and feel and experience is what you create every moment. A simple example. Well, you know, I've got too much going on right now to really find time to write. Reframed, I have too much going on right now not to create specific scheduled time to write. It's the way I take care of myself. And remember, you never find time to write. You create time. Your response, your perception of an experience, and the meaning that you attribute is the bridge between that event and your internal perception and state. And to discern meaning, you need a context to surround it. The frame can determine your state of mind. So you pay attention to whatever fits your story, whether that's a money story, a life story, a wellness story, a relationship story, the framework you use. So let's examine this specifically about how it affects the story of your writing of your book. For example, part of your life story is your self-image. If someone says something really nice about you that you don't believe, it won't register, or it'll be disavowed with an internal comment like, well, what are they trying to sell me? Natural filters include beliefs, self-image, and goals. And remember, we always return to our fundamental identity. And you know this in working with clients. For someone you help to create changes, unless that change is incorporated into their identity, the working operational model of how and who they are, unless that transformation occurs at that level, which is their identity, it won't last. It won't become permanent. So how do you reframe or reprogram to let in what you want to achieve or do with your book? Now, the key to this entire discussion on framework, your book outline is more than just your blueprint and plan. It's your frame, your framework. When you start writing about something specific, examples begin to appear. It's as if the universe is conspiring to help you achieve your goal. Yellow Jeeps keep appearing. You can't get away from them. I first had a series of experiences in psychoanalysis that I've had in more recent time in mentor coaching. Originally, I noticed that my patients who were therapists or analysts in training would notice that as soon as they worked through an issue and came to terms with it in our therapy or analysis, suddenly they had a number of their patients who would bring up this issue that they had just dealt with. Their patients had been unconsciously taking a number, patiently waiting until it was their turn, and they could sense that their therapist or their analyst was now ready to deal with it. Now, as professional coaches, you've probably noticed that and will notice the same thing with your clients. They'll wait for you to get your arms around something and resolve it or come to terms with it so you can help them with it. Now, as authors, you're going to notice it again, and it'll pertain to what you're writing. For example, suddenly, in the first few months after the release of The Secret Language of Money, along beginning with a licensed specialty certification for our financial coaches, my clients began giving me illustrations. Their money stories were their center stage, needing to be coached, really illustrating what they were dealing with that maybe I didn't quite deal with in the book and needed to be in the sequel. That's what the law of attraction tells us. Whatever you focus on, you will both notice and bring about. So here's a simple three-step combination to reframe and incorporate your new writing endeavor. One, visualization. You can create powerful and stimulating internal images. Visualization reprograms both the reticular activating system by programming awareness, and it cues your radar. And affirmations are the revision of the mind software to support the story of the visualization, which rewires your brain. So affirmations constitute the story that frames and supports that vision. To allow yourself to be creative, then you lose the fear of being wrong. You focus on where you're going. You create a visualization of the successful attainment of what you do. Secondly, change your behavior to precisely what you want. New behavior, new experiences create new pathways in the brain. With each repetition, those pathways become more deeply etched. As soon as they're well grooved, you have a habit, an automatic behavior, a default mode, exactly as you've crafted it to be. Your future self lives in your present mind. If you clearly visualize that future self, you can then move ahead to actualize that vision. Because what we know now, visualization brings about actual physical changes in the brain in the same way, exactly, the same part of the brain as if that image were coming through the optic nerve. Replays of that visualization, repeating the vision of, for example, having successfully attained a goal, programs neural networks and neuronal pathways to more strongly etch that experience. So when you create a visualization and repeat it, you actually create a future memory to live into. And here's an important aspect. You don't make the brain change permanent unless you incorporate it into your story. This may be, for example, why 95% of people who diet gain back their weight. They don't reprogram their body image. Envision the experience of your completed book, not of getting there, but of being there, of announcing and experiencing in all your senses the successful release, the entire experience of that completion. This is a way to incorporate your objective as part of your identity rather than it belonging to somebody else or being just a great fantasy. We know, for example, that by simply picturing a danger, we can trigger the entire body response of fight and flight. So the vision is portal to an entire response sequence. While your unconscious can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can. So your conscious mind needs to incorporate an evolving story to assemble that imagery and your new self-concept as part of your new story. Otherwise, it doesn't register or is just extruded as noise. Change doesn't become permanent. So there are three key elements. Repetition. Those neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly to be etched. Secondly, conscious incorporation of this new vision into your ongoing story can be metabolized as part of yourself, ultimately as your identity. And thirdly, specificity about the experience of achieving the goal. All the senses, all the specific experience, nothing abstract, nothing global, but very specific experiences, conversations, sensory registers. Visualization creates and crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea, and that experience changes the brain. A vision serves as a guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. A simple example, I know some of you have heard me say this, Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During this time that he was in prison, he recognized that since he was totally incarcerated, he knew he needed to do something to maintain his sanity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He had broken 100 on two occasions. He had 299s. Everything else was in the triple digits. So what he decided to do was every day when he woke up, he decided to visualize playing golf. He would visualize getting dressed, driving to his favorite course, getting out, warming up, smelling the flowers, looking at the sky, taking the shot, walking it. He spent 7 hours a day, 7 days a week for almost 7 years playing golf in his mind. When he was released from captivity, his first outing, he shot a 74. He had rewired his brain. The power of a vision of mind over matter. There are numerous other examples and studies, but that one is a simple and vivid one. Now, I mentioned that I wanted to talk to you about states of mind and how important it is to enter and sustain a performance state of mind to write. And think about anything that you do when you get grounded and centered before you receive a call or connect with a client. You need to get grounded and centered to be totally focused, immersed in your work with a client. Same with writing and same with creating a space where there's no distraction, getting grounded and centered to enter that state of mind for exactly what you're doing, for a creative endeavor. Now, we enter and exit states of mind fluidly and invisibly. It's kind of like the precision passage of a baton between relay team members. We each have a set of different states of mind, relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. A state of mind is a psychophysiological state. It's an internally organized software program that contains all of its own parameters, expectations, attitudes, meanings, feelings. So from an infinite sea of stimuli, the unique software package of each state of mind determines what data we actually see and take in, and once that data becomes input, how processing occurs. It acts very much like a software program on your computer. Each mind-body state determines what you do and how you respond. So a key element is awareness of the different states of mind to know what state works best for what purpose. For example, creative writing and editing, two different states of mind, two different parts of the brain. Being able to go effectively to sleep at night, a state of mind of relaxation and focused attention, in that way to more effectively go to sleep. Think about when you are wanting to do a certain task or perform, you enter the state you practice. The regulation of feelings and states of mind involves the understanding and mastery of how to access that. I want to give you some examples of how artists and authors enter a creative state to fit their intended work. Dame Edith Sitwell would lie in the stale, I'm not recommending this, but in the stale solitude of an open coffin as a prelude to entering the state of mind she wanted to write her macabre literature. Dr. Samuel Johnson and the poet W.H. Auden maintained a continuous state of stimulation by constantly consuming tea, as they wrote. Willa Cather read the Bible to set the right tone prior to her writing. George Sand went immediately from making love to writing. Voltaire used his lover's back for a writing desk. Benjamin Franklin and one of my favorite nonfiction authors, Diane Ackerman, soak in a bathtub to get that floaty feeling and write on a pine plank extended across the warm bubble bath. Coleridge used opium. The painter Turner liked to be lashed to the mast of a ship and tied to that mast when he was taken for a sail during an incredible storm, and then would immediately come back and recreate his experience on canvas. Some authors play a piece of music repetitively during the course of writing to create an emotional framework to really house their evolving story. So basically, the corresponding state of mind in the reader often matches with that of the author. The author guides the reader to that state of mind through the senses, the music and voice of the words, the texture of imagery, the rhythm of feelings. Each of us has a continuum of states with some level of awareness of what state works best for what endeavor, even how to enter and leave different states. We become more or less aware of the best state for a creative endeavor, the best one for conceptual planning. In fact, the optimum state of attention and concentration for each task we undertake, from the alertness required for maybe a business presentation to the state of relaxation that's more conducive to sleep. I'll share with you what I've learned to do for me, but I want to encourage you to think about yourself first and how, when you create a really creative state of mind and it seems like you're inspired, that's no accident. How did you get there? What was the path? What was the framework? What was the setting that you did that? So how to regulate different states of mind is really important. What do these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, F. Scott Fitzgerald. They never learn the crucial success strategy of regulating and managing their states of mind using alcohol, drugs, or some other addictive substance or process to regulate a state of mind and manage emotions can lead to significant compromise. Your state of mind, the particular software program you use, determines the meaning you attach to a stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. There are two primary ways that can most powerfully regulate your state of mind. One is physiology, and the other is focus. Physiology is how you use your body. Often it's simply a deep breath to breathe in relaxation, breathing out any tension, and focus, the focused energy field of the brain to a word or a phrase that gets you instantly grounded and centered. So this is a way to think about how you can best enter that creative state for what you want to do. If it's writing, then that's something that will be worthwhile to figure out. If it's editing, it's a different state of mind. Think about what works best in that way for you. So here's a thing, and I'll tell you how I use this in coaching, but we are always asking ourselves questions. Think about when you first wake up in the morning, before you're even recognizing that you're asking questions about what's going to happen. You know, what am I going to do today? Is there something exciting, or is there something I'm not looking for? Asking effective questions determines your state of mind. This is your power of focus. So here's an exercise. Write down sometime during the day, write down three questions that put you in a peak state. And then in the morning, first thing, before your feet ever touch the floor, when you turn on your bedside lamp, take those three questions and answer them. Remember, you're already asking questions. These are just questions that help you focus on engaging in a peak state of mind so that you consciously engineer the state of mind that empowers you. So here's an example of regulation of states of mind and making that more automatic. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach, Roger Reed, arrived, his team ranked 217th in free shot percentage, last in their division nationwide. So during practice, Reed had each of his team members do a mantra, a cue, a focus, a physiology. He suggested for the cue, dribbling the basketball twice at the free shot line, having a phrase that fit with what would get them relaxed and focused, and he suggested relaxed and smooth. And then he had them at that same time take a deep breath in to breathe in relaxation and breathe out any tension. So the cue, the two dribbles, the focus phrase, and the deep breath all occurred within 2, 3, 4 seconds. And he also had them, he was very attuned to performance psychology and getting in a state of optimum practice and performance. He would, during practice, suddenly blow the whistle, ask them to go to the line and do free shots. And if they made the free shot, they got a break. If they didn't, they ran 4 laps. In 2 years, so he simulated, basically, game conditions, because you don't get to, you know, shoot 30 free shots in the game and count your best ones. In 2 years, their team was number one nationwide in their division in free shots. So a mantra, a cue, focus, physiology can calm as well as keep you from overthinking. Ultimately, what you'll probably see is as you do that cue and focus and physiology, soon enough, if you repeat that, you'll hardwire the process where you can only do the cue, and it instantly boots up that state of mind. So this is ultimate focus. You know, think about the analogy to a mindfulness meditation. It's an exercise in focus. You focus on your breath, breathing in and out with relaxation. If you have thought, which you inevitably will, since that's also the job description of your brain, you let it go. You don't engage it. Refocus on your breath. When you have a cue and a focus in physiology, for example, back in the day when I did live presentations, which I haven't done since COVID, is to put together my end, since I don't carry a basketball, put together my index finger and thumb on both hands and then touch them together for a little infinity sign. So in 2 seconds, I am in an optimum state for a presentation. And different cues and different, you know, maybe phrases or words for different kinds of performance. But think about what will fit and what will get you in an optimum state. So this is something that can fit into a creative experience to enter a state of mind that allows this flow experience within the state of a heightened focus, productivity, and how this flow, a very positive state that's been studied in the last 3 decades especially, flow from another perspective is the state of mind of being centered and focused without distraction in the particular task that you're doing. The state of mind allows full immersion in the process of concentration and performance to create superior results. So in the state of mind of flow, think about when you've had that experience of being so immersed in something and it just sort of went seamlessly and you did better than you expected. You lost track of time, maybe. So this experience becomes its own reward. It's a state of mind. So pay a special attention how you got to that state, how you sustain it. Now, here are some things that can interfere with that process. Obstacles to become aware of so that you don't create them. Waiting until it's the right time. Waiting until you really have something to say. Waiting until you have enough money to justify the time. Telling yourself it may be too late. Being aware of what friends or family might think. Thinking that an appointment with yourself for creative time is an indulgence or a luxury or maybe will come later. So, and Yogi Berra put this flow state in perfect perspective. He said, you can't think and hit at the same time. So that's basically what a choke is. A choke is when someone doesn't perform quite to the level of their performance, practice, and possibility. When they choke, usually it's because of an instant state of mind change. You think about something, and boom, it changes. One Olympic athlete I worked with right before her performance in the Olympics noticed that something was really off, and she couldn't quite figure it out. As we went through sort of step by step, frame by frame, how she was preparing and getting in state for her performance, she noticed that for just a nanosecond, she would look at her primary competitor and wonder how she was doing. That was enough to create a choke because she thought about something which took her out of that performance flow. When she got back in that flow and sustained it, she did extraordinarily well. So this is something that we can be very helpful for our clients, but we're talking about doing it right now for you. When you write, to consider creating a place, a time, and pay a special attention to getting in state and sustaining that state while you're doing your creative endeavor. So this is something that I think can be useful as you're considering doing it. Now, A couple of other things you see in your outline, just a basic overview, slumps and blocks. Those are something to consider. A slump is kind of an extension of a choke. It's something that narrows perspective, focusing on one thing. It's analogous to thinking too little. A choke is thinking too much. You're suddenly stopping your flow and moving to an observer position to think about something, like Yogi Berra. You can't think in it at the same time. So thinking too much or thinking too little can both derail this creative process. So consider the applications for you and what's optimum for your process of writing, your state of mind, and sustaining that state for the natural flow of your creative process. So what that means is you don't have interruptions. You don't have the ringer on your phone or the ping on your iPhone or your computer. Nothing is going to interfere. And you have that time set aside so that you remain immersed in that process for the time you've decided, so that there's nothing that interferes with that state. Now, a writer's block is usually what happens when the writer can't enter a state of mind to create. So access to that creative state seems blocked. Now, to move to a better state of mind, it's about transforming that energy by getting grounded, becoming present, and entering the state of mind that is optimally creative. Centering brings mind and body together in full focus. So perhaps consider a brief progressive relaxation for a minute as you get started with writing, or a mindfulness meditation of focus on your breathing, because this is what you'll be doing during that time, is focusing on exactly what you want to focus on, what aspect of your writing, what component of your subject you'll be addressing. Or if you're reading and taking notes or in other ways gathering information, you stay focused. And getting in focus first is a state of mind. And that centering brings mind and body together in full focus. So you may go through a centering exercise. If you're blocked, don't think about all the negative stuff or getting unblocked. Think about getting centered. So here's a summary of the neuroscience of writing. Since old patterns are hardwired, consistency of focus on new experience is what it takes to change the wiring. Consistency, repetition. Concentrate on new behaviors, on possibilities rather than problems. This is a framing. Remember, this is what you ask your clients. They say, well, let me tell you about the problem. And you, because you've exercised or requested to be able to interrupt, said, let me interrupt you to refocus on the possibility here. We know about the problem. What's the possibility here? What's the challenge? So you help someone reframe to now and next, and rather than going back through and recounting the problem, and they know already all of that. It energizes them, so there's and they know how it's going to turn out, so repetition creates the illusion of effectiveness. But this is what you want to do in writing, to look at the possibilities, to look at framing what you're going to do. We know identifying a problem and pursuing it won't work. That's not what we do in coaching. Create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize, the completed book, to lay the new mental maps. And it may be what segment or what subcomponent of what you're writing, what's the cluster of what's the segment you're going to focus on this time? What's the area you're going to read about and take notes or dictate? Regulate states of mind and manage emotions to promote brain power. new insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning, left brain and right brain, to put it too simplistically, but intellectual and emotional. When diverted to an old feeling or behavior or thought, immediately redirect ideas and energy to the process of now and next, the new story, the creative immersion in writing. The discipline and work of rewriting, ultimately, for a complete book. Remember the choice architecture. What's next? Remember that the power is in the focus and that permanent change comes from the consistency of that focus. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Focus aligns and directs the energy field of the brain. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage any attention to negative behavior. Ask for the possibility. Ask yourself, what's the possibility? What's the challenge? What's next? Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put that into behavior. Think about your new experience and evolving self. How our new experiences will require thinking about yourself, your identity, in a new way, no longer in the old story. Here's how that sounds. I'm an author. So I want to conclude with some inverse wisdom for authors. Okay, this is in the introduction to an earlier book I did, Outsmart Your Brain, an instruction manual, but it's adapted for authors, for us right now. Here's the backstory. I came home from college after my freshman year and announced to my mom that I decided to major in psychology. And we talked, and she was excited for me. Then she mentioned that she had made an A in her college psychology course. I said, man, I didn't know that. I didn't even know you took psychology. You must have really enjoyed it and studied a lot. She said, no, you'd have to know my mom. I just answered everything on the test the opposite of what I thought was right. Well, here's a list of 9 things that are the inverse of conventional wisdom for authors in honor of my mom, who thought it was all opposite anyway. 1, burn your bridges. Make it impossible to go back to an old habit or way of being. If you decide to quit postponing the completion of your book, make it impossible to go back by postponing it. Create an uncomfortable scenario if you slip back. Focus on the present without any limiting habits or assumptions. Reward yourself for proceeding and not going back. Even if you have writer's block, you still don't get to go to the mall or out jogging during your writing time. 2, do the opposite of what you normally do when you're afraid, worried, anxious, uncomfortable, or stuck. The opposite. If you're uncomfortable with public speaking, avoidance is going to increase the fear. So do more of it. Embrace it. Join Toastmasters. You have to jump in the water because you can't learn to swim on paper. 3, obstacles reveal desires. To say that differently, but the same thing. Show me an obstacle, and I'll show you a desire. So instead of figuring out a way to sidestep or overcome or go around the obstacle, which is all a negative framework, consider simply not creating it. And here's the coaching statement for that. When you're ready to recognize that you create an obstacle, you're ready to consider the possibility of not creating it. 4, discomfort can be a sign of progress. Moving beyond your comfort zone is necessary for progress. Comfortable is not a place you begin. It's not a prerequisite. Confidence is not a place you begin. It's not a prerequisite. It's a place you can arrive at, though. Moving from a comfort zone is necessary in order to proceed. 5, lean into the unknown. If you wonder whether you can write a book and sell a book because you've never done it before, lean into the action of doing it in a systematic way. If you think you're too old for something, you'll be right. You can tiptoe through life very carefully and arrive safely at death. 6. Don't believe every thought you have. Well, I'll never be able to write a book. Thoughts lie a lot. They're kind of like my Uncle Ted, God rest his soul, or I'd have to use another example. You don't have to believe every thought that crosses your mind. You're not even stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better. Remember Vincent van Gogh's sage advice. If you hear a voice say, "I'm not a painter," then by all means paint. Then that voice will be silenced. 7. You do not attract what you want. You create what you focus on. Cue your radar for early recognition. Keep an eye open for yellow jeeps, stories, illustrations for your books, opportunities to talk about what you're writing about. Not your book, but what you're writing about. A caveat, to say that in a different way, talk about your subject rather than the book you're writing. Talking about writing your book can dissipate the energy of its writing. How many people do you know who have a book in them? Or, "I've been working on my book for the last decade." 8. You only see what you believe. To say that again slightly differently, some things have to be believed in order to be seen. And when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. This comes from quantum physics and the process of observing quarks. In quantum mechanics, as well as the brain, the question you ask influences the outcome you see. It's a well-verified law called the quantum Zeno effect, which is to say essentially the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. This consistent focus then rewires the brain. To use this law to help you write your book can be immensely powerful. You'll begin to see more of what you need to write about. The universe will conspire to give you examples. And 9, believe in someone and he or she will show you why you do. Neuroscience has demonstrated that authentic belief, and this is huge, that authentic belief in someone activates that other person's brain to create a state of mind that transcends usual thinking and performance. That person can be you, the author. We're in discussion mode now. I'm eager to hear what your thoughts, questions, clarifications are, anything that might be useful to discuss just a bit more. Any takeaways that you'd like to share with us? Any personal ahas? Don't have to
be profound.
Yeah,
how do you personally consider yourself?
I'm sorry, would you start over? I think I talked over you. Go ahead, please.
This is Kelly from Colorado. How do you personally center yourself?
How do I?
Yeah.
I didn't quite hear your full question. Say it again, please.
Yeah, how do you personally center yourself?
Okay, I have a kind of ritual. I have specific times and places. To me, context means a lot. I have spaces where I am most creative. I go to my ranch for a couple of days a week, and I write on my porch overlooking my lake. And I get there and I surround myself with exactly what I want. And I will admit that that's a good cigar and a really good single malt scotch. Now, I am more creative during that time than I am the entire rest of the week because that surround helps me really engage. I do everything to sustain that state. It's kind of a state of reverie, of thinking about so whether I'm reading some research or a book or looking at articles or just thinking about what I want to write about. I'm dictating it, and I do a little digital dictation device and upload it then, and idictate.com sends it back to me for an opinion, a quarter, a word. I spend a few weeks every fall in a courtyard in a 300-year-old Creole home in New Orleans. When I was in medical school there, I would jog in the quarter and see these wrought iron gates, the beautiful courtyard, and wonder what it was like back there. So now I'm privileged. I get more done in those few weeks there than I do the rest of the year entirely. I still work with clients. I still do training. But the rest of the time, I'm really immersed. And I take, you know, a carload of books and papers and things that I divide up my time between some research and interviews and what I'm working on. Last year, I completed the book that is the basis of the new training program for peak performance. This year, in the fall, I started on a new project of looking at the results of that peak performance. People who deal with extreme success. There are basically few models for people, especially people we coach who deal then with success in a way they've never dealt with before. And they don't necessarily have a model for that, to deal with the fame, the money, the power, the influence. And how do they deal with that and incorporate it into their identity to sustain and proceed with that growth? So I ask the questions that I most want to examine and explore and talk with people about and write about. So I'm immersed in my own curiosity, my own questions that guide that, so it influences everything I do, and that immersion is a total pleasure. So write about what you want to know, what gives you pleasure to come to learn, what creates growth, and what's going to be part of that, and how are you going to best put it in a way to engage other people to be curious about that, too, and to be of benefit to them. So part of that is what I learn from clients about what they most need to deal with. So that's kind of more than you asked, but I hope that helps to create a setting, whether that's at home, in your office, or wherever you set to surround yourself so that you're fully immersed in what you do and enjoying it, and you have the guidance of that pleasure and that creativity that will keep you on track to communicate specifically, perhaps to a specific group of people. Thoughts or questions about that, and is that helpful?
That was great. Thank you so much.
Super. other thoughts or questions or comments? Anyone? We still have a couple of minutes, a minute or two. Anybody else want to share something that's worked for you in this regard about getting and staying in a creative state? Or any other takeaways any of you have you'd like to share in our last minute? I think those are always helpful for others to hear, if you would share what you're taking away. Anyone?
Well, I don't want to, this is Kelly again, I don't want to dominate the class, but I just
go ahead.
A great takeaway was the fact that you talked about being centered, connecting to the stillness. That's pretty much what I do. But
how do you get centered and grounded specifically?
What I do is like, unlike you, I go to the same place. You know, they say time has memory, space has energy. So I go to the same place. I sit, and sometimes I set a timer for like 20 minutes, and then you just sit in the stillness, keep a tablet and a pen next to me, and as certain, you know, thoughts come, I'll write those things down, you know, and so that's kind of how I do it. I used to meditate a lot and stuff, but I found out just connecting to the stillness worked just as effectively.
And that's great. I think it's useful to have something wherever you are that you can capture what you're thinking. I mean, you know, I said I do everything by dictation device because I'm imagining someone I'm talking to. I have a little Olympus digital recorder any place I might sit. I have one in my car and my pickup at my office here. Wherever I go, I have something available that I can capture. If I ever have a creative thought, I can capture it. And I listen to books on audio going back and forth and will, you know, dictate something from that may be a future reference or something that I want to follow through. So, you know, if I go to a restaurant, I'll have a little moleskin thing in my pocket in case I happen to think of something, especially if I'm, you know, by myself. Like in New Orleans, when I'm by myself, I'll have something wherever I am so that I can capture it, because who knows, if I ever have a stray creative thought, I want to grab that sucker right there. So thank you all very much. And again, I appreciate the kind words and comments that you've sent. Send me an email if you think about something or want to discuss something. For next time, if you're interested, we can stick around for another, say, 15 minutes or so after the top of the hour and have more of a discussion. I'm really more interested in what you think and what's been helpful and the kind of questions and whatever discussion you'd like to have. I want to be available and to foster that and plan to hang around next time after the top of the hour so that we can have more of a back and forth. So till next time, thanks very much, and I appreciate all your responses, and keep them coming. Have a great rest of the week. Take good care of yourselves. Bye now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Thanks.